Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 23, recorded Friday, November 18th, 2005. Today's topics, the big question, fly or drive, the right and wrong way to control travel costs, and scenes from the hotel bar. This week, coming to you from the Marriott in Memphis, Tennessee. I've been running around a bit this week, did it down and back to Indianapolis on Tuesday, and I'm back down in Memphis for a couple of days at the end of the week. I head back to Chicago this afternoon, and for most business travelers, today will be the last flight before giving the airports over to the leisure travelers. No one in their right mind flies for business the week of Thanksgiving if they can help it. A colleague called me earlier this week about doing a meeting in L.A. next Monday. I said, okay, let me get this right. You want me to do O'Hare and LAX on Thanksgiving week? I'll tell you, this better be to close a deal because I'm not going through all that just to buy somebody lunch. Haven't heard back from her yet. A 40-degree temperature drop Tuesday night from 65 degrees Tuesday to 25 degrees Wednesday morning gave me my first de-icing of the season on the way down here to Memphis that tacked on a nice 30-minute delay to my flight. We had a long, mild fall, but I think winter has finally arrived. Following up, I've just posted a link on the Travel Commons website that goes to a listener survey provided by Podtrac. Now, Podtrac is one of the companies popping up to try and provide advertising for podcasts. I'm not really trying to do this for advertising, but I thought it would be an easy way to get an idea of the kind of folks who are listening to the podcast, to get a thought about who you are. You guys kind of, it's a bit of an asymmetric conversation now, isn't it? You guys know about me, and except for those of you who I've been exchanging, those few of you who I've been exchanging emails with, I don't know anything about you. So I guess I'd appreciate it if you could take a couple of minutes to complete at least the minimum fields in the survey, whatever you feel comfortable providing. You know, the Podtrac tool asks for a bunch of information. I went and surveyed myself so I could see what it was like. And they asked for a bunch of stuff that you would guess an advertiser would ask for, but that I don't necessarily care about. So, I mean, really only answer what you feel comfortable with. But like I said, I'd at least like to get a sense of who's listening. You know, quite honestly, maybe give me some ideas for some future topics. So again, if you could spare a couple of minutes, I'd really appreciate it. And I'll post up on the website whatever I get back from Podtrac. So you guys can see it too. Jess Green sent me a note actually responding to Nick Gassman's voice from the other side of the ticket counter comments on airline self-service from last week's podcast. Jess says he respects Nick's opinion but thinks United went too far by having a recording tell him that his flight was canceled. What I wanted most when I called United for a discussion of different flight options was an apology and perhaps a little empathy. It's kind of hard to get either of those from, thank you for calling United Airlines. Please listen to the following options carefully as they may have changed since your last call. You know, I think that Jess and Nick aren't too far apart. I think that Nick, as a customer experience manager, would agree that there are times when automation is appropriate and certainly times when it's not. You know, I'll tell you, simple transactions are good automation candidates. I personally like using American Airlines' automated upgrade system. I know what I want. It's got good voice recognition, so it's easy to use, and it's quicker than talking to a live agent. And quite honestly, all I want to do is get my upgrade request filed, you know, as soon as possible. However, a more complex and certainly more disruptive and absolutely more emotional transaction, like having to reschedule a canceled flight, probably not the first candidate I'd choose to automate. In this case, I think United's customer experience design cost it more money than it saved. It thought it was saving money by automating an outbound call, a transaction, but that automated call ended up causing them at least two inbound calls, two visits to gate agents, and the loss of Jess's future business. So focusing on the cost of the transaction rather than thinking through the whole customer experience, thinking from the customer's point of view, you know, it's a bit like winning the battle but losing the war. As always, thanks to everyone who sent me notes at comments@travelcommons.com or left comments on the Travel Commons website, www.travelcommons.com.
Holding on, even when I know you're gone, pieces of me can never be retrieved. You have taken them to places that I've never been. If given back to me, I could find the sleep.
That was a snippet from the song Delivery by Jennifer Helaine, which is on the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Credit to Udayan Tripathi's Life in London podcast. I heard this song on his episode number 17 while waiting for my flight down here. You can find Jennifer's website address in the show notes. The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, the big question, fly or drive? As I mentioned earlier, I had to do a down and back from Chicago to Indy this week. The meeting was timed really to allow a day trip, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., but the big question was fly or drive. The first step in the decision path was to get an accurate mileage between my house and the destination. MapQuest, Yahoo Maps, and Google Maps all agreed on the distance, 183 miles, but the time estimates varied from 3 to 4 hours. You know, that didn't worry me much, though. Leaving at 6 a.m., I knew I could do 180 miles in 3 hours, if not less. So doing the math on the flight, half-hour drive to O'Hare, 45 minutes between sort of check-in, security, and boarding, and an hour flight time to Indy, then a half-hour for deplaning and getting the rental car, and another half-hour to drive to the meeting. Now, that gets me to 3 hours and 15 minutes. So with no glitches, either from a drive or no glitches on the flight, it's pretty much a wash. Now, given that, a lot of folks would choose to fly. You can get work done on the flight is the common refrain. But, you know, let's look at that for a minute. Of the 3 hours and 15 minutes, only 1 hour is flight time. And after you subtract out time for taxi out, takeoff, prep for landing, landing, and taxi in, you're lucky to get 30 minutes of work. And that is provided you can actually open your laptop in the regional jet that, more and more often you're taking on those short hops. You know, adding some mobile phone time to the drive to and from the airport, I think you probably max out at about an hour of work time over that 3 hour and 15 minute total. Now, while driving, you're not, or certainly you shouldn't, be doing any laptop work, especially if you're trying to do the 180 miles in 3 hours or less. But you do have that windshield time to do phone calls, courtesy of, you know, a good nationwide calling plan and a Bluetooth headset. But it's break even if there are no glitches. So you end up having to weigh the probabilities of traffic and construction delays on the road versus sort of traffic and weather delays at the airport. I voted for the car, and while two of my colleagues chose the plane. I got lucky. I left early enough that I didn't hit any traffic leaving Chicago, and there wasn't any construction on I-65, and I got into Indianapolis late enough to miss most of the traffic. While in the car, I sort of split the time between personal and business stuff, listening to podcasts through the car radio with my iTrip until about 7:30, and then started making calls to the East Coast. Not to be a complete drone, though, I did listen to some music. While listening to the NPR Music podcast, I heard an interview with Bruce Springsteen about the 30th anniversary of the Born to Run album. So I pulled my iPod off a shuffle mode and listened to Born to Run, which I had on my iPod, listened to it straight through. You know, I even paused for a moment between Backstreets and Born to Run to actually simulate flipping the album. Well, my colleagues weren't so lucky. They ended up taking a two-hour delay at O'Hare for, well, I don't know, just flying out of O'Hare, I guess. So that break-even 3-hour, 15-minute number suddenly jumped to 5 hours. I can tell you, they weren't too happy when I saw them down at the meeting. Then after the meeting broke, I got in my car, immediately headed back up to Chicago. They hopped in the rental car and started heading down I-465 to the airport. They looked off to the west and saw nothing but black. A huge line of thunderstorms was being pushed their way by about 40-mile-an-hour winds. With that, they just threw in the towel. They swung off the next exit, grabbed a couple of venti coffees at the Starbucks, gave up, and started to drive home. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, the right and wrong way to control travel costs. You know, the U.S. inflation numbers came out earlier this week, and even though energy prices and gasoline prices eased a bit, the core inflation rate, what you get when you pull out volatile food and energy prices, increased a bit, causing some to worry that high energy costs are starting to creep in and embed themselves into other areas of the economy. Well, I'll tell you, this is no new news to frequent travelers. Airline fares, airfares, taxi fares, hotel rates have all been climbing higher for a while now. And, you know, as more time goes by, these increases look like they're going to stick. They're not just a passing spike. So, you know, the finance types at a lot of companies are starting to look for ways to get some control over travel costs with programs that typically sort of fly under the banner of demand management or strategic sourcing. Purchasing guys will tell you that there are two categories that they just hate trying to source, trying to control: travel and mobile phones. They both just seem to touch at the place where the personal mixes with business, and people just violently rebel against any limitations on their choices in these areas. You know, I remember many years ago when some businesses tried to claim or take back the frequent flyer miles on company-paid flights. I had a friend working for GM when, for a while, they made every employee put GM's frequent flyer number on their tickets instead of their own. There was near mutiny at these companies. I mean, the top execs didn't care. Who needs free tickets when you've got a corporate jet? But the core of the business, the core of any business, the middle managers just didn't buy in. And, you know, the airlines hated it too. They'd invented frequent flyer programs to build loyalty in the newly deregulated environment. You know, they were looking to build loyalty with individual flyers, not give corporations free flights. And so for the most part, these efforts just fell apart after a few months, just from passive resistance more than anything else. Today, it's a much smarter approach. You know, companies pick their battles. They find the city pairs with most of their company volume, and they negotiate discounted rates with the most popular carriers. They find the hotels where most people are staying, and they negotiate lower rates there. They contract with Expedia or Orbitz to provide online booking engines for these rates. You know, these are the portals that most of their employees are using anyhow. And so when it's well done, both the company and its travelers get what they want. The companies see 10, 15, maybe even 20% savings. And the travelers, you know, at worst, they don't see a lot of change. At best, what they can see is better service levels, maybe even higher status levels on the preferred airlines. You know, call it the honeypot approach, sort of minimum compliance problems, because the travelers get a better deal than what they had before. That's when it's done right, which oftentimes is not the case. What more typically happens is the senior executive secretary convinces her boss that her favorite travel agency can save the company big money if it'll only funnel all the company's business through them. The now official agency negotiates a 5% rebate deal with the senior exec's favorite airline and then tries to book everyone on that airline, no matter if it's the best price or the most convenient. Everybody pretty quickly figures out that the only one getting a good deal on this is the boss's secretary. Everyone else is stuck with screwy itineraries, lousy service, completely unusable online sites, and huge ticketing fees. All the while, the secretary is the only one who didn't have to change her travel agent and is now actually getting on top of that, getting a nice lunch once a quarter from her friend, who's now the newly promoted account manager. The main problem with these travel sourcing programs is that they don't involve the traveler. It's either some desk jockey in purchasing with a spreadsheet or a secretary with a travel agent friend, neither of whom travels, making decisions that impact how you and I will spend most of our work week. You know, I appreciate that as much as they'd like me picking out the office supply vendor or the lunchroom caterer. You know, I'll tell you, force me to use a lousy travel agent, and I'll figure out a way to have you eating dry turkey sandwiches on white bread until you fire your friend.
That's the whole concept of that.
It's a Tuesday night, we're in the bar. And this gal is hitting on me. I mean, maybe she's beautiful. Maybe.
All right, this is fabrication.
The last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, scenes from the hotel bar. You know, I got into the Marriott here Wednesday night around 10:30, and I don't know, just felt like grabbing a nightcap before heading up to the room. It was kind of interesting to see who else was hanging around the Blue Shoes bar on a Wednesday night. You know, certainly no one who wasn't staying at the hotel. There were sort of three groups spread around the Horseshoe Bar. Four sales guys telling stories, and from what I could tell, trying to figure out just how much teeth their new non-compete had. A half dozen folks who looked like they were part of some corporate cross-functional team trying to redesign some random sales order entry process. And as always, sort of 4 to 5 consultants. At the open end of the Horseshoe Bar, there was sort of a widescreen plasma TV, and it seemed to be fighting with the liquor bar display to be the center of attention. I think the TV was winning out initially, but sort of as the Lakers basketball game wound down, I think the liquor bottles won. The cross-functional team started ordering up shots, quizzing the bartender, who didn't seem to have quite the complete grasp of the hot or in-vogue shots that the blonde woman in the middle of the cross-functional project team did. After 3 or 4 tries, though, they sort of finally found one that they both knew. It's always fun watching a group like that sort of moving into shots. And it's shots, plural, because kind of like Lay's potato chips, nobody can do just one. And as the night gets longer, the mental age seems to degrade. People regress from seasoned professionals to young professionals to college to high school, which is sort of usually where it stops, because that's about when it seems perfectly reasonable to break into the hotel swimming pool and go skinny dipping. You know, I'll tell you, hotel security's got to be a thankless job. The next morning is always the tough one, though. I remember one time a bit earlier in my career, after a baseball game and a nightcap at a corner bar, we came back to the hotel, and it seemed like a really good idea at that time to break into the hotel bar for just one more nightcap. Given that we were past closing time, there really wasn't any reason to wrap up our nightcap at just one. So while there was no skinny dipping, we had a little bit of self-respect left, there certainly wasn't a lot of sleep either. And then the next morning session started at about 8 a.m. That meeting was pretty slow to start up, except for the three people who had flown in late the previous night from corporate headquarters in California and so had missed our festivities. They were chipper and ready to go and wondering why everyone else wasn't bounding up to the flip charts like them. After about 30 minutes of this, the guy next to me just slowly reached into his briefcase and pulled out, I would say, the largest bottle of ibuprofen I have ever seen. Spun the cap off, again, slowly and quietly, and he shook out 4 tablets, then handed it to me. I did the same. 1, 2, 3, 4. And then just passed the bottle on. The guy next to me, 1, 2, 3, 4. And passed the bottle on. By the time the bottle got all the way around the table and back to the guy next to me, it was empty. But it was absolutely the best thing anybody could have done. By 11 a.m., the rest of us could actually speak. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 23. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. As I said at the start, I'm off the road Thanksgiving week. No way I want to try and do my road warrior thing while dodging strollers and backpacks. It's, you know, just oil and water, don't mix. It's better to just sort of hang out at home, try and get in a few preemptive workouts prior to Thursday's food fest. I'm not sure if I'm going to get a podcast out next week. Kind of depends on how much of a food coma I'm in on Friday. But remember, don't let that keep you from sending me your travel stories, travel experiences, travel rants, because those are, at the end of the day, the core of the Travel Commons podcast. Send them along to comments at travelcommons.com or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. I also appreciate the notes, the comments at podcastalley.com. Thanks to everybody for the feedback. Again, if you don't hear from me before, have a happy Thanksgiving for those of you who celebrate it. And for everybody else, have a good week, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye now.